You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Whether it's novels, memoirs, plays, poetry, histories, how-to guides, or textbooks, books have the power to change us, educate us, and help us see the world a different way than when we opened Chapter 1. Today, the Leonard Lopate Show Book Club will be taking your calls about the books that have changed your lives. And to help us get the conversation started, we have enlisted Beth Ann Patrick, who edited the anthology, The Books That Changed My Life, Reflections by 100 Authors, Actors, Musicians, and Other Remarkable People. And we're also joined by two of its contributors, Emma Straub and Susan Orlin. And the book is published by Regan Arts.
Yes.
And I'm very pleased to welcome everyone to our show. Our number here is 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at wnyc.org/Lopate or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Why do books have the power to change our lives? So should we even be making that claim?
I think we should, Leonard, because books have the absolute power to change our lives, and we don't know when that moment's going to come along. So the people in the anthology, the participants in my anthology, didn't necessarily choose books from childhood. You might think that or assume that, but these were books from all ages and stages of life, because you never know when you're going to read something and it's going to absolutely change your attitude.
Emma, you not only contributed to this book, but your father did. Were you surprised by the book that he said had changed his life?
Oh, I don't know. I talk to my dad a lot about books. So I think if you asked him, you know, every day of the week, he'd probably pick 7 different books. But yeah, I don't know. It was a tricky challenge to pick a book of my own. I chose Frank O'Hara's Lunch Poems because it was the book that sort of ignited something in me and made me realize that I could be a poet and that New York City was as beautiful as I thought it was. And I don't know, it just changed my whole world.
And Susan, what did you choose?
Now, Beth Ann, I have to turn to you and ask you to remind me.
It was The Sound and the Fury, Susan.
Oh, okay. Because
and you got through that first chapter.
Yeah, that's really funny. But in fact, this morning I was thinking that my life has been changed so many times by books in so many different ways, and choosing one, I had a feeling that was what I chose, but I suddenly thought, wait, was that what I chose? You know, and this is sort of similar to Emma's experience. I was always a big reader, but the first time I read Sound and the Fury, I feel like it changed the rhythm of my brain waves. It changed, I felt like I was having a new perception, both of the world and of the possibilities of writing, that writing could be as transformative as that book was for me. So it was very funny because I was on vacation with my family. It was Christmas break and we were in Jamaica. You figure you'd be out on the beach. I didn't want to leave the hotel room. I just wanted to read the book.
I remember that.
I started rereading it before I even finished it, so I was reading it at two different points at the same time.
And I just want to say, Susan, there's a wonderful kicker to your story that we're not going to reveal here unless Leonard wants you to.
No, it's okay.
So
I don't believe in spoilers.
Yeah, that's right. So if you want to find out Susan Orlean's a really amazing moment, you can pick up the book.
Beth Ann, you said that a lot of the people you interviewed for your anthology had trouble narrowing down their selections to just one book. You chose a novel?
I did. I chose a novel.
A novel I've never heard of. I have heard of The Sound of the Fury, and I do know I have read Frank O'Hara.
Well, mine was a novel called Silence by Shusaku Endo, who was a very important 20th century Japanese novelist. And the novel is about really rigid Roman Catholic Portuguese missionaries in 17th century Japan. But it wasn't the content of the book that made it change my life. It was when I spoke to a friend about it, and she said, "You're so impassioned. You care about this so much. don't go to law school. Go and work in literature. Do something, you know, in literature instead.
But I was struck by the fact that you, who write nonfiction, mentioned a novel. Susan also, we know her mostly for nonfiction. Mm-hmm. She chose a novel. Emma, I think of you as a novelist. You chose poetry.
We're all mixed up, Leonard. We're all mixed up.
We are.
How important is the age of exposure? Many of our listeners wrote in about books that they read when they were young or when they were teenagers. Are we more impressionable then?
I think that's a really interesting question. I think that when you're young, I feel like every experience of reading is profound because it's such a new part of your life. But it doesn't surprise me to feel that people cite books that they read as they were becoming the adult that they are now.
And we have people have been writing in. Linda from Greenbrook, New Jersey, says she read In Watermelon Sugar by Richard Brautigan when she was in high school. She was a high school senior, and it, quote, blew my 17-year-old mind.
Love it.
Although she said when she tried to read it again as an adult, she was sad to find that it didn't quite hold up.
Right. But I do think that the books that I would be shocked if somebody said, you know, it was The Hungry Caterpillar that changed their world.
And Good Night even, Moon. Well, I love that one.
Yeah, even though these books are so important and reading is so important. And for me, I happen to be writing a book about libraries right now. And one of the reasons was remembering when I took my young son to a library and realizing how going to the library was so important to me as a kid. But a single book in my childhood didn't change me. It was more when I hit high school and began having those really personal experiences of reading where I thought the world could be this other place that I didn't even understand, and now I do.
And a number of people wrote about that it gave them a entree into worlds that they couldn't experience personally.
Yes.
Nick from Brooklyn, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Leonard. You know, my father always impressed upon me and only read nonfiction. And so it wasn't until I went to an art camp that I actually met the son of an author. I met Dan Bellow, who's the son of Saul Bellow. And so the first book I read of his was a small novella called The Victim. Mm-hmm. And it took me into a whole different world of characters and made up world. And for me, as a young reader who had only read military nonfiction and history, and then getting to know and learn about his life through his son, I just found it a wonderful introduction to literature.
So did you then go out and buy all the other Bellow novels that have been published at that time? Did that lead you to other writers, contemporaries of Bellow?
It led me to read Herzog and a few others of that time. But it took me back into sort of Holocaust writing and individuals that were writing fiction, but based upon their lives. Primo Levi comes to mind, and that was great work.
Did you find, Emma, that when you, well, in your case, you were talking about Frank O'Hara's poems, did that lead you to other poets, or did that lead you to other members of the O'Hara circle?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think I was... It was the summer after my freshman year of high school that I really fell deep into that teenage pit of beat poetry adoration. You know, it was not unique to me. And so I was sort of swimming through all that stuff. And then I found Frank O'Hara, which seemed so much sort of brighter and clearer and really spoke to me. And then, yeah, you know, that's one of the wonderful things of reading anyone, I think, is that, you know, this person leads you to that one and this one leads you to that one. And, you know, you start to realize that you're sort of a part of this whole chain of books. It's really Yeah, that's one of the fun parts.
The chain of books, one of the people that I haven't talked about yet is the actor and activist Peter Coyote. Mm. And his essay is all about reading the Odyssey in every English translation that he can find. And so when he first read it, and I can't remember, but let's say it was at 15 or 16, it really did lead him on a lifetime odyssey, of reading this great epic again and again and seeing how different translators handled it. And a lot of people had similar experiences.
I've had that experience with a number of great books, whether it's War and Peace or The Tale of Genji, where every translation gives you a totally different book. There are other times in our lives when we might be impressionable besides youth. Francesca writes on our show page, quote, I read The Goldfinch by Donna Tartt at a time in my life where I was still reeling from the loss of several loved ones. The book affected me greatly with its deeply touching story of grief and the coming back to the living and all the good and bad that it entails. Last 20 pages are some of the most moving I have ever read, and I have reread them so many times that I've memorized many of the lines.
Mm. Wow, that's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, and just to go back to Goodnight Moon, I have a six-month-old baby.
I was just joking.
No. But
I think it wasn't written when I was a kid.
But it's I read Goodnight Moon approximately four times a day because my six-month-old naps
three
times.
It is beautiful.
And it is beautiful. And at this point, I can keep it together. But shortly after his birth and after his older brother was born also, I would read it and just cry. I mean, it just, Goodnight Nobody. Oh, my God, the Goodnight Nobody page, you know?
We got a submission from somebody who was recently a guest on our show, Candace Shy Hooper.
Oh, wonderful.
She was on a show just recently to talk about her book, Lincoln's General's Wives, but she wrote in to tell us that the book that got her started was Rick Atkinson's An Army at Dawn. She says, when I finished reading it in 2004, I found it wouldn't fit into my crowded bookshelves, so I decided to organize my library. I pulled out every book in my house and gathered them into piles on the floor by category, and eureka, while I had many novels and books of poetry, by far the largest number of books were about military history, battles, strategies, world history, biographies of statesmen and generals, I realized that I had been interested in military history all my life, and at the age of 55, I went back to school for a graduate degree in history. Atkinson's book was the tipping point in my life.
Wow.
Oh, that's a great story. And I think that I think there are two scenarios that are really interesting when people say a book changed their life. One is that it causes an internal change where they are inspired or moved or begin reading differently. And then there are the times that a book actually changes the direction of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And
has that happened with you? Have you read a book that got you thinking about a certain topic?
Well, definitely I've read books that got me really interested in learning more about something I had never known anything about or thought I could care about. But I will give away the story of my particular love of Sound and the Fury, which is that I've been fixed up with someone who I went on the first date, and I was a bit skeptical about whether this was a good match for me or not, because here I am, a writer, and this was a person who was in the financial world, who's an investment banker, and I thought, we really have nothing in common. I'll just go on the date to be polite. And in the course of our dinner, and I don't know how it came out, but we discovered that both of us had as a favorite book, The Sound and the Fury, and this is my husband.
Wow. Oh, I thought it was going to be that his name was Benji.
No, it was something where I was ready to bail on the date when I discovered
that book really changed your
life. It did, exactly.
It really changed my life.
We're talking on today's Leonard LoPage Show book club about stories that were inspired by a book. In this case, the books that changed my life, Reflections by 100 Authors, Actors, Musicians, and Other Remarkable People, edited by Beth Ann Patrick. And two of our guests are contributors to the book, Susan Orlin and Emma Straub. And we will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We're talking about books that changed people's lives with Beth Ann Patrick, who's the editor of a book that's called The Books That Changed My Life, Reflections by 100 Authors, Actors, Musicians, and Other Remarkable People, published by Regan Arts, and to two of its contributors, two very wonderful writers, Susan Orlin and Emma Straub. And we had a wide range of selections from our listeners, but a few books were named more than once. The most frequently named, I guess you're not going to be surprised, was To Kill a Mockingbird. Mm-hmm. Is it that it's just one of those stories? Why do you think that resonates with so many people?
I think it's partly the content and partly the time when people read it.
Yeah.
You know, and we did have an author choose that book. And I just want to say something really quickly before I tell you about that. I didn't let any of you know what other people had chosen. And no one chose the same book.
Wow.
Except The God of Small Things by Arundhati Roy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I decided to let that stand. But otherwise, everyone chose something different.
Oh.
And so Glenn Taylor, who's a novelist, chose To Kill a Mockingbird, had a wonderful story about growing up in West Virginia with his attorney father and what that book meant to him. But I was surprised. I was also surprised that, for instance, it wasn't just the Bible, To Kill a Mockingbird, and Harry Potter.
Shannon on Twitter says, I left a bad relationship after reading Kate Chopin's The Awakening.
Oh, good
that
one.
That inspired her in another way. Let's listen to a submission we got from Anchor by one of our listeners named Natalie. She wanted to speak about Toni Morrison's Beloved.
I read it in 11th grade English in high school. And I, first of all, it's just a work of art. Toni Morrison is amazing, and I could not put it down. The whole thing is beautiful. But really, I think that what's so special about the book is that it does such an amazing job at capturing just the human horror and pain, suffering, and reality that came along with slavery in a way that I don't think any other book had really done before that.
You're nodding your head, Beth Ann.
I am, because I think she's right. I think probably since there are some books that have, maybe they've not come close on the art front, but certainly on the descriptive front. But what she's saying is quite true.
And
quite
now
honest.
Colson Whitehead's new book is having that kind of response.
Yeah.
Some books can teach us life-changing practical skills, and Joan from Manhattan writes about the Reader's Digest complete do-it-yourself manual. She says, my adult feminist consciousness was already in place owing to an exceptional enlightened mother, but acquiring the practical skills of plumbing, electrical repair, tiling, and such, this was real empowerment over my immediate environment. Besides, when the plumber stood me up 3 times for changing a hot water heater, I had to do something.
I love that. I was waiting to hear someone that I interviewed talk about a practical book, and it didn't work out that way, but I would have welcomed it.
Well, we're expanding your horizons here. I guess if you had opened up that book to our listeners, you would have gotten all sorts of other interesting responses.
I had one that I could have picked also for you that was more practical, which was Miss Piggy's Guide to Life, which was, I bought it at a yard sale for, I think, $2, and it's worth several times that.
What's the best bit you got out of that changed your life?
I mean, it sounds like a joke, but really, as like a very sturdy young girl, I really found Miss Piggy inspiring because she loved her bod, she loved her frog, and she knew that her frog was devoted to her bod. You know what I mean?
That just leaves my, I don't know, Susan?
Susan, you wanted to get into this.
I'm speechless, but I also feel like I'm That's fantastic.
It is fantastic. You know, yeah, I have a similar. I'm sorry.
You find meaning, and meaning finds you. And actually, I do think that I can see where, at the right point, that Miss Piggy would be an inspiration. And probably a lot of people's response to books, that's a very powerful response, is when they read a character that where they can project themselves into that character. And the first time that that happens to you, it's pretty powerful. And it can be life-changing, I think, to see a character in a book and think, that's me. That's my experience. And I can now look at myself in a different way. And
isn't that the power of fiction, that it often gives us insights into life, things that we kind of knew intuitively but never were able to put into words?
Yeah, exactly. And that's why it's so magical, really. It's remarkable to think that little scratches on a page could change your sense of yourself, of life, of the world, and be so powerful. I think it remains amazing to me, as many books as I've read, as many years as I've spent as a reader, and now making those books, and I think it's incredible. It's a very exciting thing to feel it happening.
Is this unique to literature? Could we have the movies that changed my life, the musical piece that changed my life, the play that changed my life?
I think so, absolutely. And there would probably be all kinds of responses to the music that changed my life. I cannot imagine. I think I would get people from all generations talking about that. But as Susan was saying, it's something about the scribbles on the page. You get to keep the book. It's not something so ephemeral as a piece of music. And one of the things that stayed with me after finishing this book is how it doesn't matter who the person is in the book. Celeste Ng, for example, who wrote the wonderful novel Everything I Never Told You, chose Harriet the Spy. Mm-hmm. And Celeste, growing up as a young Asian American girl, much younger than the generation of Harriet the Spy, didn't have that much in common with Harriet, you know, walking the streets of New York City. But there was something in Harriet, like Miss Piggy for Emma, that she could really relate to. And I don't think you get that the same way in movies or in music, because books you take at your own pace.
Yeah. There's a privacy, I think.
Yeah. Let's take another call. Aiden from Long Island, you're on the air.
Hi. Book that changed my life was about 5 years ago. I read Slaughterhouse-Five for the first time. Mm. And I've been a voracious reader my whole life, and I've read fantasy and really gotten into characters. But in that book, who you're supposed to sympathize is really with the people all around you. That's a book that the characters sympathize with are humanity and your fellow man, and not some fantastical character, some character that you relate to personally, but us as a plural. And it changed how I thought of myself and how I thought of my place on Earth because of it.
A lot of people love that book.
Yes,
but
very nice.
Some books catch us by surprise. Jenna Miller from Washington, D.C. wrote to us about A Little Life by Hanya Yanagihara, which we spoke about recently on our show. She said she spotted it next to pulp books in an airport gift shop, but it ended up changing her life. She says that shortly after she started reading it in the airport, an elderly woman approached her and warned, "A Little Life? It's wonderful, but it will eat you alive."
I would say so. That's a very, very tough book. Got to read it on a sunny day.
And then others, Alex from Brooklyn talked about Far From the Tree by Andrew Solomon, a wonderful book. Somebody else said that it was Randy Schultz's book on...
And the Vampire Dog.
Yeah, because the AIDS epidemic came alive as a result of that book. Yeah. So it can be a wide range of things. A number of people said Little House in the Woods.
Little House in the Big Woods is absolutely life-changing.
The Big Woods. I left out the word. That's,
but I mean,
thank you for correcting me.
Well, when you remember that book, there's so many tangibles that come back. And that's another thing that I saw when people were remembering these books. They were remembering real parts of them. They might not be able to recite sentences and paragraphs, but the book came right back to them.
I understand that part of the proceeds of this book will go to A26 National.
Yes.
What does that organization do?
It's actually, and they say 826 National, and I want to make sure I correct that because I've been saying 826 myself for months.
I'm getting a lot of things wrong.
No. It's 826 National is a wonderful organization that the novelist Dave Eggers founded. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how many years ago, and I believe he co-founded it with Vendela Vita, another great novelist. And it's to help young people, not so much, it's not about literacy per se, it's not about learning to read it, it's about learning to write and learning to publish. And so often when students go into an 826 chapter, they're in LA, they're in New York, they're in DC, they're all over the place, they will write something and then put it into a book. And so they learn what it's like to be a writer, to be an author. And we really wanted to celebrate something like this in the books that changed my life. And it, working with them has been such a joy. So,
Susan, you mentioned that one of the things that bonded you with your future husband was The Sound and the Fury. Did you discover that you shared more than that as far as your literary tastes were concerned?
I was going to say, nope, that's it. Yes, as a matter of fact, well, he was a passionate Faulkner reader and had read every single thing Faulkner had ever written, including some of his lesser works.
The bad books at the end.
Yeah, and, you know, it was a real surprise to me to discover that he was such a reader and such a lover of books. And it was a very bonding moment. And I have a feeling that if I had gone, I used to feel this so much about people's taste in music, and it's also very true with people's taste in literature, is it's a defining fact of whether you feel a kinship with someone or not. And there's no doubt in my mind that my relationship with my husband it was certainly accelerated by discovering that we both felt so strongly about this book and about Faulkner in general, and that it kind of grounds you in a world of thinking, well, here's somebody who appreciates something that's so personal to me.
I found myself on first dates when I was in somebody's apartment looking at her bookshelves. And if I approved, isn't that terrible to
admit?
No,
it's very intimate. That's not terrible to admit. Who among us has not looked at the bookshelves of a potential?
Oh, yeah. And as a matter of fact,
she read that? Oh, God, no.
In college, because people's bookshelves were so often defined by what they were assigned to read,
right.
It felt like slightly less of an exposure than when you're an adult and you're picking your books. I used to peruse people's record and CD collections, and as soon as music migrated onto people's iPods, I thought, well, wait, how do I even know who you are if I can't look at your record collection? And but it's definitely, I would find it odd if someone wasn't curious about what books I cared about.
We have to leave it there.
Unfortunately, part of who you are.
We've run out of time, but my great thanks to you for contributing to our show and to all the people who called in. And I should point out that a lot of interesting writers contributed to this book called The Books That Changed My Life. Margaret Atwood, Amy Bloom, Ken Davis, Kate Cora, Sofia Coppola, I'm sure I'm leaving out also, Roseanne Cash, an interesting selection, Keith Carradine.
We've got the new digital officer of the city of New York, Sri Srinivasan, in there as well. So
And thanks to my two writer guests, Susan Orlean and Emma Staub. Also, of course, to the editor of this book, Beth Ann Patrick. It's called The Books That Changed My Life, Reflections by 100 Authors, Actors, Musicians, and Other Remarkable People, published by Regan Arts. It's been a pleasure having you all on our show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a pleasure to be with you.